The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
You're with Brett King at Breaking Banks. So this week, we're going to talk about how to leverage social media to connect with the community. And in this respect, actually, if you think about the whole role of advice and particularly personal financial management and the professional finance space in terms of financial planning, financial advisory work, increasingly, we're seeing a lot of new content emerge around this. We're seeing some great tools in terms of portfolio management and the like, but we're also seeing communities start to advise each other. One of the really interesting examples of this that I ran across actually a couple of years ago now was a site called Covesta. And what this site allows you to do, and some others have since copied the concept to some extent, but Covesta allows you to join a community of investors and look at someone's investment strategy and their portfolio and how they've gone in terms of investment. And if you think that they're a good investor or they're a good strategist in respect to, say, a particular portfolio or particular asset class that you like, maybe investing in platinum or rare metals out of China or something like that, then you can mirror their investment portfolio. And what happens is that these individuals then, you copy their investment strategy, and when they make money for your portfolio, then a share of the fee that is generated through the Covesta platform goes back to the individual who you've mirrored their investment portfolio with. Really very interesting use of community and investment strategy. But when we come to the advisory space, we now have a situation where for many Gen Ys and digital natives, the first place they may go to look for investment advice may be searching through Google. And they might come across a blog, or they might come across an independent expert that is in this space, and that may be where they start. It may not be their instinct to go to a financial planner off the bat. So interesting discussion that we're going to have today. What I'd like to do at this point is invite our first guest, Ashley Jacobs, onto the show. Ashley is a community coordinator, and she's a social media editor and a college finance writer. She writes for Wisebread. Ashley, tell us a little bit more about yourself and the community you're a part of and the blogging platform that you're involved in.
Well, thank you so much for having me, first off. My name is Ashley Jacobs. I'm a Wisebread's community coordinator, social media manager, an editor, and a writer, primarily focusing on college and how college students manage their finances. One of the big things that I do for Wisebread is our weekly tweet chat. We host a chat on Twitter every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. That often generates over 2 million impressions and frequently trends on Twitter. So I'm very active in the social media, on the social media platforms, and yeah.
So what's the typical audience of Wisebread? How did you guys position this, or who did you build it for?
The typical audience are very frugal-minded. They're trying to save money, find ways to save money on, traditional everyday expenses. So saving money on your car, saving money on groceries. We have kind of a wide variety of people that covers. It covers anyone from college students to stay-at-home moms to, even retirees who are trying to make their retirement money last and just keep money in their bank accounts and yeah, just stay frugal.
So do you think that a social media website or social media generally can actually help change someone's behavior? Is tools like this tactically going to change how much money I spend and therefore, you know, how much I'm able to save?
Yeah, I definitely think that with the right use of social media, you can learn how to better manage your money and save. For example, with our tweet chats, we've done chats with companies like Experian on credit scores and monitoring your credit reports, and that's encouraged people to go and, you know, check their credit reports and make sure that there's, you know, no issues on their reports and that their credit score is good. Or if it comes to retirement, we recently did a chat with Transamerica about the importance of saving for retirements and different retirement accounts that really encouraged people to start thinking about saving for retirement and looking, you know, years down the road. So I think that social media definitely opens a door for dialogue and stresses the importance of being financially savvy and thinking about, you know, your big financial picture.
So how much of these decisions, in terms of the tactical nature of the content that you have on the site, you know, do you find people, is it in the research phase that people are looking at this, or is it more a regular activity they do? So is this related to a specific decision in terms of how they spend their money, or is it more just generally they're looking at this to get an overall understanding of how to manage their financial health?
I think it varies. I think it's a little bit of both. There's certain people who will look at their budget and see that, you know, they feel like they're spending way too much on groceries. So how can I cut back on my grocery bill? Oh, Wisebread has an article on, you know, 10 ways to save when you go to the supermarket. But then there's also people who, you know, they are thinking about the big financial picture and ways to save long term and ways to make their financial picture allow them to have the life that, you know, that they want to have. So they'll go to Wisebread and look and see, you know, just in general, different ways to save or what retirement account options are out there or, you know, just stuff along those lines. So it varies kind of from person to person. Like I said, there are people who are very focused on one specific aspect of their finances, but then there are people who are looking at the big picture.
Now, there's a lot of talk about this new class of consumer, the digital natives, the millennials, the Gen Ys, as we variously classify them. Is their behavior in some ways, you know, fundamentally different from that of their parents or their grandparents in respect to the way they make these decisions because of the availability of content they have? What are your thoughts?
I definitely think so. I think, at least, you know, for me, when it comes to the way my parents manage their money or the way my grandparents manage their money, they aren't necessarily going online to, you know, find those resources. They aren't necessarily on the social media channels. I know there a lot of kids have their parents, you know, on Facebook these days. My parents never joined it, so they'll never, you know, see any financial information through Facebook or Twitter or any of that. I feel like the older generations probably go more, you know, traditional routes, like getting their financial advisors and whatnot. But my generation, we are so, like, locked into social media. We are always on Facebook. We're on Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, you name it, we're there. So that's the best way for us to be able to, you know, get that financial information and be able to make good decisions with our money.
Yeah, I like to describe it when I'm talking to bankers about this. I like to describe it that those aspects, social media or a smartphone or a connection to the internet, this is not new for digital natives. This is just how they live their life, whereas bankers think of these things as new and disruptive. But it's just instinctive these days for Gen Y to use these tools in their life, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, I mean, I think it's just going to continue. I have a little cousin who she's like 4 years old and she already knows how to use my iPhone better than I know how to use it. So I think it's just it's going to continue and everything's going to be more, you know, digital and technologically based.
Now, I'm interested in actually the structure of your site. Now, the reason I wanted to see you get into this is you've got personal finance products there, so things like credit cards and other tools that people can get information on. But you've also got life hacks, career advice, frugal living advice, and deals. So in respect to actually the way visitors to the site use the site, is it more they're coming to look at products, or are they more coming to look at ways of living in terms of from how they navigate through the site and how they utilize the site?
I think it's kind of a little bit of both. Sometimes people will be, looking for the best credit card for travel rewards, and they'll type that into Google, and it'll take them to Wisebread, or they're looking for, retirement brokers that you can get your retirement accounts through, and they'll type that in, and it'll take them to Wisebread. But then there's also the people who, they do come for the frugal advice, and they'll type into Google like, oh, how can I save money on gas, or how can I save money on utilities, and that'll drop them into Wisebread as well. And then when they get there, they can kind of see the other options that we have for helping them manage their finances, and again, just kind of get that their big financial picture under control.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about mobile, because we've talked about social, but obviously mobile is also something that's fairly new in respect to financial decision making and the tools that are available on mobile. So what sort of methods do you recommend on Wisebread or generally as a platform in terms of making financial decisions and using a smartphone?
In regards to using a smartphone to make good financial decisions, I think apps are very, very important in regards to that. There's great apps out there for, being able to manage your finances. Mint's a good one. Many of the banks now have apps so that you can keep track of your money via apps on your phone. Wells Fargo has a great app. I know Ally has an app. So being able to utilize your phone to keep track of your money is highly important these days.
So this push in terms of open, transparent content and advice, it's interesting that we're seeing a lot more activity come from the likes of Wisebread than we are seeing from banks and financial institutions. Because I think to some extent their expectations have been that you'll walk into a branch if you want this type of advice, or you'll seek out a financial advisor. So how do you think this movement around social and mobile is going to change the way banks and financial institutions connect with their customers in the future?
Well, I definitely think banks and other financial institutions are probably going to start having articles on their sites, having their own blogs to go along with their sites. I know Experian, for example, they've got their own blog now on their site. I believe Wells Fargo does have a blog on their site as well. So we're definitely seeing banks and other financial institutions start moving towards using social media and blogging to reach customers. Another example would be Experian started doing a tweet chat called their Credit Chat. So they're definitely, moving into trying to reach all audiences and get the good word out there.
Very good. So, what are you guys going to be doing over the next few months it's interesting at Wisebread that we should know about?
For me, I'm still going to be working very heavily on the tweet chats. We're definitely working on bringing bigger tweet chats with bigger prizes to, get the word out there about good financial habits. We've got great content coming in the works that will definitely help people learn to manage their finances better. We're working on retirement content and all sorts of stuff like that. So we've got some exciting stuff coming your way.
Fantastic, Ashley. Well, can you stick around? Because what I'd like to do in the final segment is have a bit of discussion with the other guests and yourself on a little bit more insight, put the futurist hat on a bit and see what's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. You can stick around with us?
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Fantastic. So you're with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We're talking about how community, social media, blogs, and the new availability of rich advice through these platforms is changing the way we see personal financial management and the financial advisory space. We'll be back right after this break.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're with Brett King at Breaking Banks. Welcome back. So before the break, we were talking to Ashley Jacobs from Wisebread, a very interesting blog and you know social platform. A lot of community involvement and some great ideas, lots of life hacks and advice on products. But now I'd like to invite Lou Carlozzo. I hope I'm saying that right, Lou. Lou's a contributor at Reuters Money, but he's also involved in a bunch of other things. Lou, give us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today and what you're doing right now.
Absolutely. And by the way, Brett, you nailed the pronunciation, which is better than I do on some days. I started in personal finance journalism in 2009. I had been a longtime journalist editor at the Chicago Tribune, and they gave me a brand new column called The Recession Diaries, which had a short run but a good run. The reason it was a short run was that I was laid off from the Tribune in 2009, along with the 53 other people. It was very odd to hear talk show comedians, people say, yeah, the recession is so bad, they laid off the recession writer at the Chicago Tribune, which is true. I got used to being the brunt of jokes. It's not too bad after a while. It's like my 15 minutes at the time of fame. But from there, my column was picked up lock, stock, and barrel by AOL. And then I, in a very short period of time, I became the managing editor.
This was WalletPop, right?
This is WalletPop, correct. And WalletPop was a fantastic success story. It was one of the most read, and I'm probably a little biased since I was on the editorial team, but I think we were one of the most readable sections in AOL's financial coverage. They had another site called Daily Finance, which was more than nuts and bolts, and we got to have a lot of fun. In fact, one year, because we're talking about progressive ways that, you know, finance might be looked at, it also, another side of the coin, interestingly, Brett, is how finance will be covered. And I will never forget this as long as I live. My editor comes up to me one day and says, we want you to do a story on the Black Friday shopping season. And I'm like, okay. But we don't want you to write it. We want you to sing it.
Sing it?
And I'm thinking, what? Well, they knew I was a musician, so they this was not my idea. They asked me to compose a song, and they sent me all of the things that I had to mention in the song, like Juju Pets and, you know, Nintendo Wii and all the stuff that was topical, and we actually put that together, and I flew to New York and shot a music That's video crazy. For that, and it was a great deal of fun. And from there, I got promoted into the managing editor position. Then my editor and me and a bunch of people, we all left AOL right at the time of the Huffington Post acquisition. It was a big time of turnover in the company. She now works at Reuters as full-time staffer, and I'm a contributor at Reuters Money. So a lot
right.
of
and you're also stories. You're also involved at Money Under 30.
Oh yes, yeah. Money Under 30 is very interesting because I think that in terms of what you were just talking about in the last segment, we're seeing a lot of the rubber hit the road. You know, with our readers, they're very smart. They're extremely tech savvy. I think personally, Brett, the last thing a writer should be doing, even if you're writing about or covering something, is to always portray yourself as an expert every time. And I'm very upfront and transparent with my readers saying, teach me, show me. I want to learn this. And then when I learn it, I get a chance to deep dive into it. And if I find something that's good, I'm going to let you know about it, and I'm going to try to take it apart and explain it to you. It's really the ride of a lifetime right now. It's a very exciting time. I think it's an exciting time for finance and for money. It's an exciting time to watch, you know, what's going on with the crowdfunding legislation in Washington. Exciting time to see how people are really mashing up the world of social media and financial management to come up with entirely new and exciting things. And I just, every day is an adventure. You don't know what's going to be revealed. It's a
I love your description of the mashup because, yes. And it's a bit of a techie term. I mean, obviously we understand it, but that different approach, that mashup approach to this, it's a really good description of it. Just to, you know, in full disclosure, you know, I used to train wealth managers and financial planners, and it was interesting because, you know, in the accepted or conventional wisdom was that, you know, the way this process would go with consumers is maybe they would ask a family friend or someone they trust, or maybe they do some research by reading a newspaper, or they might go to an investment club, and that is going to then lead them to meet with a financial planner or a financial advisor who could recommend the right investment strategy for them. But that's just not the way it really works for digital natives, yeah. Is it?
It's not. And, you know, you couldn't be more right when you're talking about this, because one of the most amazing disconnects I've encountered in the last year, and I've heard this from both sides of the fence, Brett, is that on the one hand, for example, you have financial planners who say, I don't understand why people under 30 aren't coming to us. We've got the tools. We want to help them. If we talk to them, we can make them money. You know, sure, we're going to make money in the process, but we're going to teach them smart things, and we're going to help instill habits into them that will last a lifetime. And then I talk to the people who are under 30, and they say, whether they're, you know, in a job track and they're doing really well, or as was the case with my last research assistant, she has a journalism degree and she walks dogs for a living, right? It's like, well, if I had a few hundred dollars extra to go see a financial analyst, that would be great, wouldn't it? I'd get that ball rolling, but I don't really even have that money to start out with. So, you know, I'm out a couple hundred dollars and I still don't know what the analyst can do for me or the financial planner, right? And to me, that's a shame, because I am a bridge builder. At least that's what I like to fancy myself as, right? And the more I can get out there and evangelize for things that work. You know, you did not solicit this, but I'm going to say it. Movement is a great example, something that to me, it works, and it works beautifully, right?
Right, thank you.
Yeah, the more we can talk about stuff like that, then people don't have this fear. What is amazing is that you do see people combining on the internet in all sorts of great ways. You know, for all of its shortcomings, Facebook is still a nice walled garden, right? And people can, you know, when they get in there and they get secure with their people or their posse, they can sort of put something out there. You know, there are, I think even within Twitter, you know, you kind of see people, you know, break off in terms of hashtags or interests or obviously people they follow or people who follow them. And there's so much out there, and there's more to come. I mean, Instagram, Pinterest, and, you know, someone, the attorney general for the state of Illinois was telling me the other night, I was talking to her, and she said that there is now a site that when you post something, for example, it disappears so instantaneously that their government computers can't figure out how to crack it or break into it. So there's a dark side some of this stuff too, right? But I mean, I think the bottom line is that if we can get people together, experts and novices, people with questions and people with answers, instill the discussion and evangelize for what works and get that message out there and get it out repeatedly, we're going to see great things happen. I mean, finance is just going to totally turn upside down in a great way.
Absolutely.
In the next decade. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's interesting because when you think of financial advisory stuff and whether it's brokers or whether it's RIAs or whether it's an advisor sitting in a bank, you know, one of the risks has always been, is this individual measured on AUM performance, you know, the assets they have under management? Are they pushing the product of the month? Because, it certainly happens within the bigger banks. Versus this collaborative approach, do you think that we're getting more personalized? You know, I don't want to use the word needs-based selling, but are we getting from the community more centered around the needs of people in terms of why they're investing versus the vehicle of investment?
A really good question. I mean, I think it could be both and it certainly there was a platform that I studied among the traders, for example, called TradingView, that they created it because, you know, these guys are obsessed with their Fibonacci curves and things like that, and yet a lot of them sit solitary, one to a desk, right? And there's no real place to talk, and Facebook is not the natural place for them to talk this stuff, right? So they really sort of set up their own little place where they can talk and trade these things and go back and forth. So I'm being very speculative here. And for those of your listeners who are more educated about this than I am, I wouldn't doubt that I'm wrong about this, but I think I'm speculating from a place of being informed based on what I've seen in other areas of the internet. What we might very well see is just people creating more of these walled gardens that are very specialized for this type of information, right? Especially the financial information. And then it just becomes a matter of, you know, it could be very much insider sort of stuff. It could be very jargony and it's just the professionals talking to professionals, or it could become more permeable after a point. And I think that with the amount of entrepreneurial muscle you're seeing right now, I mean, I talk to entrepreneurs who are doing different and incredible things every day. I don't think it's all that long before we're going to start to see the people with the questions and the people with the answers mix. And, you know, of course, what's the bias of high tech? The bias of high tech is metrics, analytics, numbers, data, big data, right? So I think if somebody says they can do something, they're going to have to walk their talk. But where big data and the web really make a mistake, and this is the thing that I have tried to advocate for, right? Spotify is a great example of this, and Pandora is a great example of this in the realms of music. I don't want any damn algorithm telling me what music I like, because that's my heartbeat, right? And when you're talking to someone about your financial,
but if you have a human in a community that you trust, and they say, "Hey, have you tried this out?"
Exactly, because that's what it is. It's passion. And people don't think of money as being a passionate thing, but I don't know how many experts I've talked to, Brett, in the last year that they say that outside of sex, money is the most personal thing you can talk about, right? And in fact, for some people, it's more personal. You know, I have a friend, I've known him for close to 20 years, and we go out drinking all the time. I still don't know what he makes. And he's never told me. I've asked him a couple of times, and he's always very coy about it, right? So, you know, I think that why am I mentioning this? Because even if someone has the numbers, if they have the data, if they have assets under management, can show you all of this stuff, you still want to have an approximation of, I'm sitting in this room and I've made eye contact with this person and I like them. I trust them. I don't know why I get that good vibe off of them.
But do you, I want to get into this a bit more, but, you know, we're running short of time before the break.
Sure.
But, you know, just quickly, you know, but do Gen Ys have that same psychological need for being in the room?
You know, that is a fascinating question. I think yes and no, because what I have heard from Jen Wise as a reporter and also as a mentor, right, you know, to some of these people, is that they've sort of grown up with a bias of we've been sold from the day we were born. Look, we accept that you're going to try to sell us. That's how the world has become, but you've got to prove it. You've got to have some.
Right. It's got to be that value exchange. There's a trade-off in this, and I'm prepared, if there's value demonstrated, to be involved. I get it.
Yeah, but then the flip side of it, which I find to be a paradox, is that they might get involved in some corner of the internet or, you know, cyberspace where they don't necessarily know that trust is 100% there, and they fly blind a bit. And, you know, the phenomenon.
Maybe trust becomes the new value economy, Lou. I don't know. But listen, let's continue this discussion a little bit in the final segment, Lou, with the two ladies. Right now, we're going to have to go to a break. You can stick around, though, right?
Absolutely.
Great. So that was Lou Calozzo. Lou's contributed to Money Under 30, works with Reuters, contributes there, and was previously with the Chicago Tribune. So, Lou, thanks for joining us. We'll be back right after this break. You're with Brett King on Breaking Banks.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business talk.
Game-changing technologies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up the status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take a coffee break with Game Changers on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top big data innovators. Learn about emerging big trends and technologies and how you can grow your business and profit. Startup Focus with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King. We've been talking personal financial advice, personal financial management, and particularly interested in the Gen Ys, the digital natives, and how different their behavior is. At this point, I'd like to invite our third guest for the show today, Mary Beth Storjahan. Mary is a CFP. If you don't know what a CFP is, it's a certified financial planner. Is that right, Mary Beth?
Yes, it is.
And you're also the founder of Workable Wealth. Now, you do a lot of writing, you speak, you're a financial coach, but again, you're focused on this Gen Y digital native space. Tell us about Workable Wealth and tell us about the work you do with this younger group of early financial citizens and how you give them advice.
So again, my name is Mary Beth Storjahan. I am a certified financial planner, and I founded Workable Wealth actually earlier this year. So it's a relatively new financial planning firm. After 10 years of industry experience, this is the market that I'm incredibly passionate about. So I decided to break off and go after servicing it. So I work as a writer, speaker, and financial coach with my clients. Gen Y, mostly 20, 30-somethings. I'd say the age range I find I work with most is probably about 25 to 36. I really just help them to, you know, I heard you talking a little bit earlier about AUM. You know, investments is obviously a part of it, but I really serve as an accountability coach. I help them to plan, to organize, to gain confidence in their financial lives. And once we have that plan in place, my services are, you know, holding them accountable to it. So that includes the check-ins as far as, you know, updating their 401k allocations, getting that estate plan updated once they have kids, you know, making sure they have the appropriate life insurance. So I really help them to just have a peace of mind around their finances. This is the time, you know, Gen Y, we're very tech-savvy, but we're also going through tons of transitions. I mean, they're graduating college, you're job hopping, you're getting married, you're having kids, you're buying and selling homes and moving cross country. You know, there's a lot that's going on in this age range, and it's kind of unsettling. So my goal is to help my clients navigate through that.
Now, I like your site, because as I was looking through it, you talked about, I see under financial planning, it's not about how much money you make, it's about what you do with what you keep. Mm-hmm. And also some of the questions you're asking, asking your potential clients: should I buy this? How do I know if I can afford it? How do we merge our finances when we get married? These are very practical questions. This is not your typical approach to financial planning, I'd say, though.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's they're questions that people have, though. And that's, you know, I started Workable Wealth because, you know, I actually was lucky enough to major in financial services in college. And it was then that, as I was majoring in it, that I realized, you know, I had my peers, my friends were majoring in music, psychology, English, and there was not one finance class involved. And they had the same questions I did, and they had nowhere to go for answers. So it became a passion of mine, you know, 10 years ago. You know, my interest was peaked, and it's not your traditional approach to financial planning. I'm not talking about retirement with them. I'm talking about living their best financial life right now. What can you do right now with what you're making and what you're keeping?
Yeah, because I think Gen Y is when I was 20, I didn't have the patience to talk with someone about saving for retirement. It was like, yeah, I'm going to worry about that later. I don't have to worry about that now. I do also like the fact that you can do your initial meetings and your regular sessions with your clients via Skype. So, financial planners has always been about the coffee shop or meeting face to face. But do you think we've got past that point now? We don't really need to do this stuff face to face, that it can be just as fulfilling or just as purposeful on a remote basis?
Yes, I do. I actually think, you know, I heard you speaking with Lou on the last segment, and I really think it's a yes and no whether or not what Gen Y wants. I think it can absolutely be done remotely via Skype, via phone. I'm doing it now. Clients are absolutely open to having never met me face to face and agreeing to, you know, engage my services to help them over time. So I definitely think we're at that point where it can be done. But it goes both ways. There's some clients who, if given the option, if they're local, they would love to meet me face to face. So they're not going to turn that down. So I would say we are definitely at the point where we can make our clients' lives easier and our lives easier by handling things remotely.
And you're based in San Diego, right?
Yes, I am.
Right. So you still do some local tactical stuff face to face, obviously.
Yes, I do.
Now tell me, how do you think Gen Y's, you know, you've heard the discussion in the previous couple of interviews. How do you think Gen Y's do their planning differently from the previous generation? Or what would you characterize as different about the way digital natives and Gen Y approach their finances from the previous generations?
You know, I think the accessibility of information makes it a lot different as it is. So I had a reporter call me last week and ask about collaboration. Gen Y wants collaboration or validation on their investment ideas, is what he said a survey findings found. And, you know, I think if anything, Gen Y is looking for that accountability factor. They're looking for the input on their goals, on how do I merge my finances. They're looking for the person they can talk to about their career. They're looking for everything. They're looking more for that guidance on, you know, maximizing my employee benefits. How do I enhance my career? They're looking for a more comprehensive than just the basic retirement planning or give me a portfolio investment allocation. It's a lot more comprehensive. I haven't actually had somebody come to me yet just saying, can you allocate my portfolio for me? That's a piece of it, but I haven't seen somebody who that's all they want. So I think it's a lot more comprehensive and a lot more open-ended than it traditionally was.
Right. So it's more, I'm not quite sure I know what the problem is, but I need a problem solved.
Yeah, it starts with one thing and it uncovers, but, you know, like I said, the transitions, you know, that happen. And so I think it's just uncovering and they'll take whatever advice you can give them. If it is career, you know, on how to maximize their career, for example, or going for that ask. That's something I do too, is coach my clients on what are you making? When was your last salary increase? What's the industry standard? Those are all things that I talk to my clients about now. Also that I wouldn't talk probably with a pre-retiree about, or even 40, 50s. You know, you assume they're established in their career. I don't know many planners that if they do talk about that, you know, have you asked for a raise recently? That's not something for that generation, but it is something that I would address with my clients.
Now, Mary Beth, I also noticed that you're fairly active on Twitter and you're fairly active on social media generally, which I think is great. You know, you've been also, you're heavily involved in a number of blogs. I see recently you've been on Go Girl Finance and The Street and, Yahoo Finance and other things like that. But, this is quite interesting because when I speak to other financial advisors, there was a bit of a question about social media and, even the FINRA rulings initially around social media were pretty challenging in respect to many perceived there was actually more risk to use social media than the benefit you'd get from it as a financial planner or advisor. But you seem to have found a comfortable space with that. So tell me about how you use social media as an advisor or financial planner.
So I use social media really to establish the relationships and build credibility and trust. So the credibility for my clients, it comes from, you know, when I write for Go Girl Finance and I'm a Go Girl Finance expert, for example. So a lot of my articles are shown on their site or when I'm quoted. So being able to share those resources through social media builds my credibility. One of the avenues I use though also is to show my true colors, I would say. You know, Gen Y looks at financial planners and you automatically think, older white guy, mahogany desk with a bull and a bear statue on, you know, in front of them. And what I try to do is kind of like, you know, I let my guard down. One of my most popular blog posts I wrote was financial planners aren't perfect. And it's that, you know, financial planners are serving as your accountability coach, but I have one for myself. And, you know, financial planners have given up their own financial opportunities in lieu of others. And, you know, we make the same mistakes that other people make. We're real people. Another one I actually just recently wrote was, I'm a financial planner and my state's not in order. You know, it talks about how my husband's in the military. He got his will drafted before he was deployed and I didn't get mine done. So I share those stories. I share my personal stories to let people know that they don't have to be perfect. They don't need to have a ton of money to have a financial planner. I'm just like one of them and they don't need to be afraid of, you know, of feeling, you know, there's no stupid questions type thing. And
the human factor.
Oh, you are. So that's something that I use social media for, is just to let them know I'm a real person, and I use it to share bits and pieces of my life and then also to share those financial resources, so to make sure that I'm, you know, I have a presence as that person they can go to for questions or with questions.
Okay, so now getting into the tactical side of the financial planning, beyond the discussion or the annual review or the planning sessions themselves, how are you using technology with your clients to manage your day-to-day relationship with them and their holdings?
So I use Skype for the meetings. I'm very accessible via email. As far as managing their spending, for example, I recommend online apps such as Movin or Mint or YouNeedABudget.com. Those are all things I recommend to my clients to sync up with automatically. That's a recommendation that comes off out the front, you know, off the bat. And a lot of people actually still don't know about some of those apps, surprisingly.
Right.
So I recommend those apps as far as managing their spending. As far as thinking investments, or what else do you mean?
Well, yeah, just, you know, like if someone says to you, I'd really be interested in buying, you know, X, Y, Z stock or investing in this, but I'm not sure it's the right time. And, you know, recalling that someone has a specific asset allocation plan, but it wasn't the right time for them previously. You know, do you send them a text? Do you send them a DM via Twitter? You know, is that sort of tactical stuff happening over the technology?
It's happening via email, and most of our stuff, I use Dropbox with my clients as well. So we can share files back and forth, and but most of my stuff is via email. I haven't really gotten to text yet, and Twitter is mostly, I use kind of more building those initial relationships. So once client is engaged, it's mostly everything's very, you know, privacy policy. It's all via email is how I keep it. That way it's all documented and vaulted.
Sure. I like the Dropbox idea, though. That's good. That's the first time I've heard that. So
yeah.
That's good. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. It's really easy. And I also have an online software that I use for data gathering. So where it's traditionally you would get the checklist, clients can actually log in online and submit all their stuff. So I try to be as paperless as possible with my clients.
Well, Mary Beth, thank you very much for joining the show today. Can you stick around? And after the break, we'll be talking with Ashley and Lou in a bit more detail about where we go from here. Is that okay?
Yes. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. So you're with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We're talking the financial behavior and financial planning habits of Gen Y and digital natives, amongst other things. We'll be right back after this break.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking, with features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance. Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King. At this part of the show, if you guys have been listening to the show previously, you know at the final segment, I always like to put the futurist hat on and start thinking 5 to 10 years out where these technologies and changing consumer behavior will logically lead. You know, what's going to be happening in 5 to 10 years out? Because if we can understand that, then we can start anticipating the changes in the business that we're going to have to start thinking about in the near term. So let's at this point invite Ashley, Lou, and Mary Beth back to have this discussion. So let me start with you, Ashley. You know, as the digital natives get more affluent, and obviously they've been very used to using their mobiles, using a tablet, using social media, what do you think it's going to be like in 5 to 10 years' time? How are they going to be doing their investing? How are they going to be looking for advice? How's it going to change between now and then?
You know, I think that they're still going to tend to gravitate more towards using technology to get their advice. I feel like, you know, that generation, we're more of a generation of convenience. So I wouldn't be surprised to see fewer and fewer brick and mortar banks and such, because that generation is going to tend to go more for convenience. So being able to do mobile deposits of checks through their smartphones or getting
You still
advice.
Think we're going to have checks in 10 years?
you know, it could go, you know, direct deposit. People are more and more using direct deposit to get their paychecks. I know I still use checks. I'd like to think that those won't go away, but I'm sure at some point they will. But yeah, I could definitely see the brick and mortar banks going away and being replaced by completely online banking or mobile banking, and people trying to get information, you know, through apps and through blogs and through social media. As far as social media goes for the future, I've noticed it seems like things are getting shorter and shorter in regards to being able to get your message out there. I mean, first we had, you know, MySpace and then Facebook, and now people are, you know, going on Twitter where they only have 140 characters to get their message out there. You know, we have YouTube, but people are starting to go more for, you know, Vine videos, which are super, super short.
The videos are getting shorter, correct?
Oh, yeah, videos are definitely getting shorter. So it's going to make it a lot harder to get your message out there, because you're going to have to craft your message and get your information out there in a much shorter span of either characters or time if you're using video.
I think you're absolutely right. One thing that I get asked a lot, or people say to me a lot, particularly in the traditional banking space, they say, yes, look, we know why Gens right now are very digitally focused, but when they need a mortgage, they're going to come and see us in the branch. And I'm like, what makes you think that you know, they're going to suddenly change their behavior because they need a specific product? This is their instinct now to use these tools. So very, very, very good, Ashley. Lou, what about yourself? Give me a bit of thinking 5 to 10 years out.
Wow. There's so many things I see. I mean, one of the things that I have heard from experts I've talked to, we're in the tipping point right now. We are in a historical moment right now where mobile, right, with cell phones and tablets, more people use that. They get their information and trade and go back and forth with their information with those devices than laptops. And so in 10 years, we're just only going to see that explode. And, yeah. You know, I think that we could see, for example, as the Siri-type technology gets more sophisticated, right? And
like an agent avatar or an agent advisor that can sort of help you through some of the gaps in the technology and advisory space, maybe.
Exactly. So it would be, you know, just as Siri can be literate in French or Japanese or Italian, you might have a variant of that program that is very literate in, you know, what you need to do financially, and you're stuck in traffic, right? Because we all know traffic in Chicago is going to be much worse in 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So you start talking to this particular variant, say, well, do this for me, move my money here. You're not even logging on to a banking app anymore.
Right.
Your agent is
looking after it for you. It does all the tricky, complex stuff.
Exactly. And then maybe the other thing that I think we're really going to see is, again, we had talked previously in my segment about, I think, trust is a huge factor, right? So
yeah.
We may see these sort of walled gardens pop up, right, where all of the people who are trusted spaces where the people who are doing the financial work are fantastic. You know, you can trust them. They've been vetted. You know, they've got all their paperwork in order in terms of, you know, having the right certifications and things. And then you might just float out there. Hi, my name is Lou. I need this, and this in terms of putting my financial package together. And you put it out there, and then 30 minutes later, 10 different
an auctioning site for your financial advice, yeah.
Precisely, because it sort of solves the two problems that people have.
I get it. It would be really interesting to sort of see a Yelp-style rating for financial advisors, some transparency there. So good advisors actually can really thrive as a result of community as well. So, Lou, thanks very much for joining us. Mary Beth, what are your thoughts in this space? Give me some thinking 5-10 years out for, you know, how's your job going to change?
You know, I really... I piggyback on what Ashley said, I completely agree. I think definitely bigger focus on technology. If there's not a big, you know, big focus now, even more going to social media and these blogs for the investment advice. I think something that I see happening now that I see happening even more in the future are strategic partnerships. So, you know, like those brick and mortars are going to go away. The company might stick around, though, and they're going to need a partner. So I just went to a financial bloggers conference earlier, last month, actually, and there were banks there. And it's great. You know, it started off at 250 people 3 years ago. It's to 500 now. And they actually had a whole area where sponsors could come and do their showcasing. So I think you're going to see a lot more of these partnerships and people kind of piggybacking on each other to get in front of the audiences. Yeah, more collaboration, definitely. Technology-based, definitely, as well. And as far as, you know, there's another whole industry debate as far as robo-advisors. We talked about algorithms earlier as well. I think we're going to see more of those pop up.
It'd be interesting. I think the connection and collaboration is really key. But the fact that actually the way financial players will be able to collaborate better through social media and these technologies. Well, sometimes we miss that may actually produce more efficiency and better results for end consumers or clients in the end than just the way it is necessarily today. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, look, thanks, Mary Beth. I'm afraid, guys, we've run out of time. I think we're going to have another show on this in the new year because I think there's a whole lot more that we could get into here. But I want to thank you guys for your participation today. So we had Ashley Jacobs. She's the community coordinator and social media editor and the college finance writer for Wisebread. Check out wisebread.com. It's a great site there as well. Lou Calozzo, Lou previously with the Chicago Tribune. He's a personal finance contributor for Reuters Money. He's a columnist on Money Under 30 and previously was with WalletPop at AOL. And Mary Beth Storjahan, a CFP, who's the founder of Workable Wealth out in San Diego but does a lot of her stuff digitally. You've been with Brett King and Breaking Banks, and we've had a really interesting show. We look forward to next week's show, and thanks for joining us again. See you again next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.